Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Liz Marshall. Thanks for being with us, Liz.
Hi, nice to be here. I'm in Vancouver, so hello from Canada.
Hey Liz, can you tell our listeners how you got involved in veganism and animal issues?
Sure. I would say that I've always been an animal lover and protector and an environmentalist at heart, absolutely, since I was a kid. I would say that's just been inherent part of who I am. But in the late 80s, I read John Robbins' iconic book, Diet for a New America, and that really transformed and helped shape my thinking about food production and the impact on animals and the environment and human health. And over the years, working as a filmmaker, I called myself a vegetarian. And so I wasn't vegan. But then back in 2012, when I was making my feature-length documentary called The Ghosts in Our Machine, I went vegan making that film because it truly opened my eyes fully to the reality for animals that are used in all the various industries around the world. And so that was really the leap forward and in my consciousness at that point to understanding why people go vegan and the moral reasons for that decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was a beautiful film, by the way, The Ghost in Our Machine. We had Joanne MacArthur, who you feature in that as an activist and photojournalist, you know, using her camera to document plight of abused farmed animals and other animals. And it was really a wonderful film. So kudos to you for that. I could see why that would be an impactful experience for you in changing to a vegan diet.
Yeah, thank you.
Back long ago, it was books like Diet for a New America that turned a lot of us vegan. And nowadays, it's more film that motivates people to make the change.
Yes, I think documentary film is and can be a very powerful platform and vehicle for illuminating big, important, critical, urgent stories, ideas, issues, and especially now with COVID and the isolation and the reality of staying home more and more, I think it presents a new opportunity because we need documentaries that can really help us to not only feel utter despair, but to give us a sense of possibility for solutions. And yeah. So Meet the Future, my 2020 documentary that was released during COVID lockdown back in April, is really a story about a potential game-changing solution. And that's why I made it. That's what motivated me to make it. And it's just slowly getting out into the world right now. Yes, documentary is a really important tool.
I remember, I think it was back in 2002 when I first learned about lab meat. And, it doesn't seem like we've gone fast enough. And I see two possible problems. One, carnivores or non-vegans will think of lab meat as being Franken food. And the other thing is that vegans and vegetarians might want to stick with Beyond Meat and Boca Burgers instead of going to something that's so close to being like an animal. What's your feeling on how it will be accepted by consumers?
Well, I think that we're a very adaptive species, and I think that because of, the pandemic and because of climate change and because of heightened awareness, at least in sort of more high-income countries and Western society, there's more awareness now about alternative forms of meat and protein and plant-based meat and now cell-based meat, which will probably be on the market in the next couple of years. I think it's an idea whose time has come.
Oh,
And absolutely, I think from a consumer perspective, I mean, 90% of the world eats animal-based meat. And meat consumption is actually expected to double in parts of the world that have fast growing economies and population growth. So it's a pragmatic way of looking at a solution. Whereas it is true that veganism, plant-based meat alternatives are also growing hugely in popularity, and consumers are embracing that more and more. But when we look at statistics, animal agriculture takes up roughly 45 to 50% of the world's land surface area. We need solutions, and we need them now. So this is another way of coming at that in terms of finding solutions.
Also, animal agriculture is responsible for so much pollution that can be eliminated by clean meat, lab meat, cultured meat, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, the nomenclature is interesting, and it's actually part of the story in the film. It's the first film that I've made that's about the birth of an industry. So I certainly learned a lot. I didn't know anything about issues of food regulation and labeling and all these contentious things. Sounds a bit boring, but actually in the film, it's interesting because we were at ground zero at the genesis phase of something that could potentially change the way people understand food, and certainly the way people understand conventional meat. So it's about a transformative story. And the nomenclature is interesting because, like you said, it's referred to in a number of different ways: clean meat, cultured meat, cell-based meat, and now cultivated meat is a term that people are embracing as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think we should probably, because I think it's hard for so many people to keep up with the trends, but I think we should be clear that, you know, there's some people within the meat industry who are fighting this, and then there's other companies who are supporting that we can talk about in a little bit in terms of investing. But I guess we should clarify that this is basically, it is meat. It's made from animal cells. So it's, it's not anything different from really what people have been eating for a long time.
Yeah, correct. It is a food innovation that eliminates the need for breeding, raising, and slaughtering animals. And if it successfully gets off the ground, if it is scalable and affordable and regulated and on the market, which every indicator suggests that it will be at some point soon, it could really transform the way meat gets to the plate. And that's what motivated me to want to tell this story. So Meat the Future is an exclusive story that chronicles the birth of this revolutionary industry over 3.5 years. And so Memphis Meats is the startup company that we were able to get exclusive access to. And so they are a small group of really interesting scientists and foodies and food regulators and innovators, pioneers. And so, yes, it is growing real meat from animal cells, as opposed to, they describe it as from the cell up, as opposed to from the animal down. That's how the meat is actually produced. And I tasted it as part of my research and part of my work. I tasted the meat produced by Memphis Meats, and it was so interesting. And it tasted exactly what I remember meat to be. And I didn't have any moral dilemma in sampling that meat. I mean, it was a bit freaky and weird because it was it had been so long since I'd eaten meat, but I found it fascinating and sort of like landing on the moon or something. Uh-huh. So really, really interesting. So earlier you asked, how are consumers going to embrace this, or will they embrace this? Is it even viable? Is it even possible? And I just quickly, what I said was, I believe, and we are an adaptive species. And I think the more that we learn about how meat is made now and all of its impacts, negative impacts to the health and welfare and rights of animals and to the ecosystem and biodiversity and water systems and greenhouse gas emissions. All of these issues are so important. And I believe that also in light of COVID and meatpacking plants, with all the attention on closures and how the virus is spreading within those work environments, I think that this will become the new normal at some time in the near future. This along with plant-based meat at some point. Mm-hmm. It's not to say that small regenerative agricultural operations will go away, because they won't. But this is really the issue. The issue that this is focused on is industrial animal agriculture, which is probably amounts to about, what, 95 to 99% of where people are getting their meat from globally. It's really the small percentage that comes from more niche, elite, regenerative or local kinds of operations that are small. So mm-hmm. That's what this is about. It's about the transformation of the industrial animal agricultural system that currently exists. And the meat industry knows it. They're putting their money behind this. They're investing in it.
Because of the pandemic, we're learning that most infectious diseases come from animals. I think that will help drive the change.
Yes, zoonotic disease, can trace it through history. And that's what this is. That's what the coronavirus and the COVID-19, that's what it is, zoonoses, caused by germs that spread between animals and people. And there's also the issue of antibiotic resistance. And that's one of the biggest public health challenges of our time as well. So there's such a convergence here. So cell-based meat could help prevent future health pandemics. There's a lot of focus on wet markets, wild animals being packed together in markets. But farmed animals in confinement, that's a breeding ground for foodborne zoonotic disease.
Yes.
And growing meat from cells bypasses the breeding, confinement, and slaughter of animals. Mm-hmm. So it could limit the risk to public health.
Right. And it protect food security to some degree, because, you know, you're going to have a more controlled environment with less of these outbreaks and less of these pandemics. And we've seen it with swine flu and other things that are affecting farmed animal populations. And as you alluded to before, you know, we have this booming population worldwide, and we're also having worldwide hunger increases. And, you know, this malnourishment is still a very big problem in this world today. And we just can't seem to get there by consuming 70 billion land animals every year. It's just impossible to keep up with the demand.
And actually, that was partly what I just said, was partly from a Wired magazine story about modernizing meat production. If you do a Google search about agricultural revolution and about modernization of meat production and about meat alternatives or cultivated meat or plant-based meat, it's just endless, the amount of information and the articles and the discussion that's out there now.
Oh, yeah.
The COVID is accelerating these industries and the growth of this innovation and research and development. That's what's happening.
You would also think that wildfires in California and hurricanes in Florida would also help accelerate. As you said, it's a convergence of many factors.
Absolutely. We need solutions, and we need them now. And so what excited me about following this story is that it's underway. It's not just theoretical. Of course, in a way it is theoretical, because it's not regulated yet. But what we were able to capture in the story is, I mean, let me just step back and say that Meet the Future focuses predominantly on one startup company called Memphis Meats. And it's like a microcosm to represent all the others that are popping up around the globe now.
For so long now, we've had animals that are artificially inseminated. They're given antibiotics, you know, in advance of even getting sick, and growth hormones, and we have genetically modified, you know, products in grocery stores. And so I feel like it seems a little bit silly to draw the line on this and be like, oh, now I'm concerned about, you know, food being produced slightly different.
Yeah, that's a good point, Tom. Yeah.
I mean, I think the conventional meat industry prides itself on its ability to engineer and innovate and be on the cutting edge of technology, right? And that's what they've done. They've engineered animals to grow so quickly. It's so unnatural.
If you look at a wild boar and compare it to a young pig, or a wild turkey and compare it to a factory farmed turkey, you know, there's a great difference. We've really changed what animals are.
Right. In order to get them to grow faster and, you know, quicker and be able to be slaughtered and sent to market sooner. Well, you know, I think, you know, you alluded to it earlier, but there's really, and you captured it in the film, you timed it so well. I think you've seen this big burst in investors in this, including Bill Gates and Richard Branson. And then, as you noted, like Cargill and Tyson. What kind of products, because I don't think I got the full spectrum, but what kind of meats are they working on right now?
Oh, well, I think they're working on everything. What we were able to witness is their poultry, and in 2015 they unveiled the world's first meatball. But in 2017, to your point, they unveiled their chicken and duck product for the media, and that is what basically attracted huge investment. So that was a twist and turn that was dramatic for us to follow, and that's in the film.
Yeah, that's really critical to the success of the endeavor too. I mean, that's the second part, trying to ramp it up to be commercially viable, and then of course, like we talked about earlier, changing the perception of what lab-grown meat is.
Absolutely. So in 2017 and 18, Cargill and Tyson came on board as investors. So that's two of the largest meat industry companies. And then Richard Branson, Bill Gates, and then other investors from around the globe as well.
I'm looking forward to seafood. That's the last thing I gave up when I went vegan. And it's just hard to find in area grocery stores. You can order it online, and I've had some really good vegan shrimp and stuff, but I'd like to see more variety in vegan seafood.
Yes, well, Blue Nalu is a startup company that's doing well in California, and Lou Cooperhouse is the CEO, and he's actually in the film briefly. And I know that they've had some investment, and they call it aquaculture. So it's the same food science, where they are innovating fish and seafood from cell culture. And it's just a no-brainer. I'll eat it. I'll eat that.
I might eat it too.
Yeah, I'll definitely eat it.
I will not eat it. I probably won't eat it. It's too much for me.
It is really fascinating stuff, though. Liz, can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about the film?
Absolutely. So let me say that Meet the Future has had a really wide and successful Canadian release this year. It was released during COVID on our national broadcast network, CBC, and then also via Hot Docs Film Festival, which is North America's largest documentary film festival. And we've had so many reviews and interviews and lots of media coverage. So that's very encouraging. And we're slowly getting it out there onto the film festival circuit. We've been at roughly 8 international film festivals at this point, and that just continues now. And then we've got a great sales agent, one of the best, in fact, Vesna Kudik from Met Film Sales. She's the woman that was behind Blackfish. She acquired that film from Sundance. Okay. So she had a strong instinct about Meet the Future, and she's great to work with. She's pitching to all the buyers around the world. It's just that COVID has put a bit of a wrench into everything right now, so things are moving perhaps a little bit more slowly than they would be otherwise. But we're confident that the film will have a wide release soon. We just don't know the details yet. But what people can do right now is they can follow us and be part of the conversation. And they can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. They can also check out our website, meetthefuture.com. Of course, meet is M-E-A-T, meetthefuture.com. And, you know, check out our screenings page, our press page. We've had a lot of international press. So it is a buzz film. It's getting out there slowly. And we want to build our audience online. And so please follow us on those different platforms.
We've been talking with filmmaker Liz Marshall about her recent documentary film, Meet the Future, a powerful and insightful story about the game-changing food innovations in cultivated meat and its anticipated benefits to animals and our planet. Thanks for joining us on the show, Liz.
Oh, it's so nice to talk to you guys. Take care.